Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Yaz Shahab, CEO of Brachium, coming to us from San Ramon, California. How's your day going, Yaz?
Day's going awesome. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Good. No, this is fun. You know, so I have to thank you. Yaz has been a Foundersuite customer since like day one. I think you've pretty much put my kids through preschool, which is a non-trivial expense. So thank you for that. Very much appreciated. So it's fun to have you on here. Yeah.
Likewise. My pleasure.
So what is Brachium? Unusual name. It doesn't lend too much to divulging what you guys do. But tell us, you know, what do you do and how did you come up with the idea for this business? What's the backstory?
Yeah, so the backstory, let's start with Brachium. So Brachium means arm in Latin. And we are a three-year-old company. We've been in stealth. We're ready to come out of stealth by the end of the summer. So what I can tell you, we are in the dental robotics space. And what we have an autonomous robotics platform that uses a lot of heavy machine learning and latest robotics technologies to really perform most dental treatments. I am not a roboticist and I'm not a dentist. The idea really came with, I have two co-founders. One is a dentist. And we were biking out one day out here in the hills of East Bay. And George Wong is his name. He really looked like crap, like he's going to fall off the bike. Mm-hmm. And he starts to tell me about the problems that he encounters in his day-to-day life as a practitioner. And there was one little nugget that caught my attention that he said, I feel like I'm a human milling machine. And I just thought, tell me more. He said, do you know what dentists do? They do 80% repetitive manual labor day in and day out. They have back pain, back problems, no consistency of quality, poor customer experience. Let's face it, no one likes to go to the dentist. And I said, what do you want to do? He said, I want to develop a robotic platform that can do a lot of this repetitive manual labor with a high degree of quality and convenience. And we started fleshing out a really nice patient and practitioner story, where we really quickly realized that there's a lot of pain points for patients, which is every one of us with a mouth and a set of teeth, essentially. And the dentist, which well, in the United States, you're talking about 200,000 dentists and another couple of million in dental practitioners, hygienists, assistants, et cetera. So that's how the idea came about. And as I mentioned, I am not a roboticist and I'm not a dentist. I'm a entrepreneur software guy from way back in the old days. I know the drill by now. This is number six company for me. I needed to get the technical co-founders on board. We needed to get the fundraising, all the talent. So I reached out to one of my colleagues in my network. And as you know, Nathan, it's all about timing. This guy is Dr. Hadi Akil. He is a eminent roboticist in the field. He was just leaving his position at FANUC America. FANUC is the world's largest robotic company, and he was actually the co-founder of a joint venture between GM, General Motors, and FANUC. Got him on board, and we got to business. We did all the MVP, the validation, went out, talked to folks on Sand Hill Road, in the robotics industry, in the dentistry, onboarded an outstanding team of digital healthcare professionals. And here we are 3 years later with a lot of, with a product, with clinical trials, with a lot of the things that we, that a company like us have, has to do in the field. And that's our backstory, really.
You mentioned clinical trials. Does this have to go through device testing? It's certainly not a drug, right? So what's the hurdles you got to go through on the clinical trial side?
Yeah, so really at any time in the United States you do anything with a human being in healthcare, you have to go through the FDA most of the time. We've seen some companies skirt that. Some companies don't actually have to do it if you're in digital healthcare and you're doing more of a pure data play. But since we're offering essentially an autonomous robotic service, I mean, we're in the service industry. You come to us, we sit behind the machine, we conduct a treatment. From the FDA perspective, this is a medical device. We are non-invasive, non-significant risk, class 2. There is a concern from the FDA side with anyone in terms of efficacy and safety. So we check those boxes in our clinical trials, so we're good to go.
And so you're targeting, I think you said, end of summer for kind of launching formally and getting out there in the market, or what? Where are you guys at?
No, so where we're at right now, we're targeting end of summer to come out of stealth with the whole product and product story and so forth. We are approximately about a year from getting to market at this point. A lot of the learning that I had to do, again, coming out of the software and consumer electronics environment, develop, test, deploy, iterate, you don't do that in healthcare. There's the barriers, regulatory, quality systems. So that's what takes incremental time in that for us. So yes, product is ready. Is it ready to see patients tomorrow? Now we have to do some validation and testing and finish our FDA regulation.
Yeah, awesome stuff though. It's really interesting to see robotics creep into so many places. The name escapes me, but you know, at Launch Festival, you saw that robotic coffee kiosk, pretty cool stuff. I'm starting to see those guys around a little bit more. Just recently interviewed Robots as a Service platform over on the East Coast, which we're going to launch that podcast pretty soon. So it's your timing seems interesting. So talk about raising money for robotics. I guess, are you raising money for a dental business that uses robots or a robot business that focuses on the dental market? Like who, you know?
Yeah. So that's a great question, Nathan. So we are really a robot as a service business. We are a robotics company that's going on in the dental business. We do have a pretty powerful patent that was issued a year ago for us, a system and method for automating medical procedures. So what this patent means is we're essentially the owners of autonomous robots in healthcare. Can we take it outside of dentistry? Absolutely. Will we do that? Possibly someday. But we are focused on the dental space. Here's the interesting part. First year of the company, the three founders are seeded the company and we got our prototype off the ground and we did the initial MVP that all entrepreneurs do. Then we started knocking on the doors of Sand Hill Road. Again, this isn't my first roadshow, and went to some of the friendlies that went, and something amazing started happening. Every door was open for us when they heard robotics, machine learning, patent, all the stuff. Uh-huh. You can hear the dog squeak a little bit shot when you say dentistry. And these are really smart, well-known brand name investors in healthcare. And I have a running bet with my co-founder. I think it's $100, maybe it's more now. The first time we encounter a healthcare investor who knows dentistry, he wins. Hmm. Dentistry has near zero deal flow in Silicon Valley. The only success story is really Invisalign. We've seen some.
Sure.
And that was a different time, and the way it happened for different reasons through Kleiner Perkins. We're seeing some things like Quip, the digital toothbrush, digital healthcare. But you'd be surprised when we went out there. Half the pitch was really educating our investors on why this makes sense, the problem solution. And these are really, really smart, incredible investors. But to see them scratch their heads and say, like, wait, is this what's happening in the market? We're talking about 187 billion market yearly in the United States, about 560 billion global. In the absence of pattern matching, it's not a good story. So we said, great, we'll come back later when we have some traction. So we did what I've done in the past. You go to your customers. So we onboarded a couple of folks that are used to be in the dental industry. We connected with their network, and we set up these roadshows across the country, New York, Chicago, Washington, D.C., you name it. We would host a soiree, as you would do, like you have in your with Founder Suite. And we'll give our pitch to informed in dentists, and pretty quickly we were able to raise our full seed round. We raised $3 million in an oversubscribed round from future customers.
Mm-hmm.
The nice part about it, part of the raise, not only does it validate the product market fit, we've essentially have our year one target about 55% pre-sold. So yeah. You get future customers, invest with you, pre-order the system. It's a win-win.
Yeah, no, it's makes a lot of sense. I mean, you hear about dentists investing in startups sometimes, and you know, why not invest in a startup they really know? Yeah. And you know, I'd say a startup they really know or understand, and that also maybe, I don't know if this is me speaking too bluntly, but maybe you know, potentially puts them, I don't want to say out of business, but does it? Are they hedging their bets by betting on you, saying, you know, maybe I'll be automated, and so I should be on the, you know, put some money into the winner that might take my job? Is there any kind of?
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because that is really one. You know, when we went out, and I remember doing our first pitch, it was at the Chicago Dental Show that happens every year in Chicago. In February, which, everyone wants to be in Chicago.
Enough said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Enough said. And we were hypersensitive about that. Here we are, we're asking dentists to invest with us. And look, anytime you're going to roll out a robotic blade, there's always a fear of replacement, displacement, I'm losing my job. And what we really heard was quite the opposite. We heard is, wow, we always knew dental robotics is going to come one day. Medical robotics has been around with Intuitive Surgical for the last 20 years. We just didn't know when that day was going to be and who's going to bring it to market. Number two, there has been so many dynamic shifts in the dental industry around consolidation, dental services organizations, which are the conglomerates like Kaiser's. There's been a push for quality of care, standardization, and efficiency. Guess what robots do? They give you efficiency, standard of care, they give you data, they give you all these things that really elevate a sector, whether the sector is a robot building a Tesla or a hot dog bun or working on your tooth prevention, so to speak. So we were surprised at the reception that we got, and again, the proof is in the pudding. We got a round, oversubscribed, future customers were saying, yes, we see this is the future of dentistry, we want to be part of it.
That's good. So talk about the mechanics of raising around from a lot of different customers. I mean, there's sort of a parallel, you know, in some crowdfunding sites, you've got people who are fans of a video game also investing. I mean, but that's, you know, all organized through a crowdfunding site. So when you're putting together this round with a lot of different dentists, can you say how many dentists, and then how did you, do you have 100 dentists on your cap table, or kind of, you know, what are the round mechanics of this?
So, yeah, so I was really concerned about that when we went out and pursued that. It was like, oh my gosh, here we go. We're going to do a party round in the startup, and it's going to be this nightmare of investor management. So number one, I think, you know, the first step when we woke up the round is I reached out to you. It was like, okay, we got to get on board with you guys, because I believe I could not have done this without Founder Suite platform. Yes. Yes, there is a plug, but it's true. He can tell you I'm on Founder Suite like every day, every week because of investor management. We got on board about 30 dentists with us and a few other high net worth individuals, friends and family. Again, no brand names out of Silicon Valley, even though we tried and reached out to the usual suspects. But so that is around. So we have, you know, it's not 100 on the cap table, but it's in the 40s range. In terms of the mechanics, I mean, are you asking about the process, how we went through it?
That was one. It's kind of two parts. I was thinking, like, you know, did you roll them all up into some sort of special purpose, you know, vehicle? So it's just one entity. So, but that was one question. Like, you know, do you have 30 people on your cap table or like one special entity? And then also, how did you round them up? Like, actually, yeah, the process. How did you round up and get all these guys and gals, these DDSs to kind of commit and, you know, how do you herd the cats?
Yeah. So the herding, let me answer that last question first. So herding the cats was, it's a challenge, as you know. Raising money is a full-time job, let alone raising money from private investors. So what we did, we really needed to rely on sentinels and folks in the field who have the Rolodexes. Again, I'm not a dentist, I'm not a roboticist. I don't have a Rolodex with 10 dentists. I only have, you know, my co-founder. So these people, again, were salespeople, ex-salespeople for major dental companies. We went, we gave them an incentive in terms of stock options in the company to help us out. And they, again, they saw the vision of that and they opened up the Rolodex and we would go and set up these events. We did a couple of online Zoom conferences, WebExes to get that, but we had the best results when we had boots on the ground in a ballroom or in a restaurant, and we did our pitch, and we bring out all the stuff.
Would you do those?
The end of the pitch.
Sorry to interrupt. Would you do those tangential to like a dental conference? I mean, a bigger. Would you be like setting up little investor meetings at a hotel room or conference? You know, as the National Dental Association is putting on their big show, or is this more your own thing, independent of that? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, so it was absolutely our own thing independent of that because we really wanted to stay in stealth. But we, when possible, we did time it to coincide. So like at the Chicago Dental Show, that's usually 4 days in February, we would be there, but, you know, in a private suite, in a hotel, behind closed doors, and we'd do that. We would host a dinner, we'd host drinks, we'd do that stuff.
Cool, yeah, cool.
At the end of that came the hard work. We have these little packets that we leave behind. We did the rounds. This was a convertible note. So we would leave them the term sheets, a convertible note, a little blurb about the company. We would take these packets and my assistant would input them later that night into Founder Suite. And we would give everyone, seriously, we would give everyone a log on onto our website, into a pretty decent data room that had the deck, that had some of our procedure videos, that had some of the things. Then I would get in the phone every morning, Founder Suite in one screen, phone in one screen, just calling. And as you know, it takes an average of about 7 contacts, calls or emails, to get a response. I think our conversion rate, and again, I would have to go back and check on that. I'm going to say we probably converted 35 to 40% of the people.
That's pretty high. But,
yeah, which we're really surprised at that. I was really expecting, you know, 10% conversion rate. But again, since early on, we learned whom to target and to pitch, This was not a classic Sand Hill Road seed investor kind of a thing. It was strange and odd and never before attempted. And there is no comps. We don't have competition, which is, you know, it's not always a good thing. As you know, people say, well, wait a minute, how come no one have thought of it? You know, what's special about you? the usual stuff.
That's great.
In terms of a roll up, to your second question, we did them individually. We had some folks who rolled themselves up. So we had a couple of investors, I think three to four, a couple of times, that they formed their own LLC and they came in together.
Gotcha. Cool. So you converted 35-40%, which means you probably talked to 100 and, you know, say 20. I'm kind of just backing into your math here. And you identified those sort of top of funnel 120 through, you mentioned sentinels. These were people who had been salespeople in the dental world and had a Rolodex of dentists. Is that correct? That was kind of the feeder into your funnel?
That is. So feeding into the funnel, we had about three to four at one time of ex sales reps in the dental world. They fed the funnel. We selected the funnel. As you know, some people drop out of the gate, like, yeah, you know, I'm not interested. I'm not that. And again, by the time the funnel gets to the relevant investors, then the pitch has some resonance with them.
Yeah, cool. And were you identifying, or these sentinels, were they identifying, how were they identifying? Because I'm fascinated by this concept of raising money from your customers. I think it's a great, you know, interesting strategy. How were they identifying or qualifying? Let's call it qualifying. How were they qualifying that these dentists either made investments, you know, or had money to make investments? I mean, you know, yeah.
So that's a great question, and thank you for making me think of it, because I haven't thought about it in a while. So when we brought these folks on early on, they understood the business and they understood our target investors. It wasn't just the dentists. We were looking for dentists who are either early adopters, dentists who had thriving practices, or dentists who were just investors. The first check that was written to us was literally, we are at a steakhouse. The dentist could not make the event that we had. And halfway through the steak, he's like, I got it. I'm writing you a check. You know, do you want to stop by my house now or can you wait till tomorrow?
Don't you love those moments? Yeah.
Absolutely. But here is why, Nathan. He is an investor. He invests in the stock market. He invests in other startups. He's a true investor.
Yeah.
And coming to him in his wheelhouse to say, by the way, this is something that you're going to have in your office upon launch, he was like, here's a check and I'll take two right off the bat. And that was it.
Yeah, cool. That's great. Actually, that's a good question too. Do all these investors get your first, you know, first priority or other rights or, you know, on the actual equipment when it comes out? Do they kind of have first dibs? Kind of like the crowdfunding model, right? If you're an early backer, you get first. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So part of the investment is they get to invest with us and they get a number in the queue. And that gets them the units out of the gate. Some have asked for some limited exclusivities on region and time and stuff like that. We shy away from that at this point. But they're just happy to get it, you know, the first people on the block to get that system.
Awesome. So, you know, you mentioned it was oversubscribed at the end, which is really cool, but it, you know, kind of took a while to gestate. So, like, what do you think the catalyst was to get this, like, sudden last minute, you know, oversubscribed burst of energy? Was there any tipping point, or it just went like that?
Yeah. So look. So in my experience and worldview, there is always this cycle in fundraising. When you have a nice bump in the beginning, then there's a little trough, then there's a plateau, then something happens at the point. Either that plateau goes down into nothingness and you're like, eh, that's it, we're not going to be able to fundraise, nobody loves us anymore. Or you reconnect with certain people, an inflection point that get it, that help you get over the goal line, so to speak. I think for us, number one, we showed consistent, tremendous progress. I send out a quarterly newsletter. It goes out on the last week of the last quarter, like clockwork. I keep all my investors updated. There's a few of them are MVPs that they call me, I call them, say, how can we help? How can we support you? So we really built a grassroots momentum with them.
Yep.
And eventually they reach out to their people, they reach out to their people, and it's a perseverance and momentum. That's really what it is.
Sure. That's great. Yeah. I actually love hearing stories like that where it's just like, hey, you just kind of kept grinding and persevering and it, you know, started to build momentum on its own. Like, those are great real life stories, I think, which are often different than what you're, you know, reading in the headlines of TechCrunch. It's so.
Yeah. So I want to. So I think, you know, I understand that we're very, I'm very grateful for our progress and our success. I understand that this isn't the case for everyone. And, you know, under my belt, I have, you know, a couple of wins and a couple of losses in the track record. But I think at the end of the day, you know, when you embark on a startup and knowing the risks involved and knowing that the high degree of volatility, you really got to ask yourself and your co-founder and your co-founders, how far are we going to go? And when I took this on 3 years ago, that's the first question I asked my co-founders. How long are you guys willing to go?
Yeah.
And they clearly, I clearly heard them say, we're taking this all the way. So we're really not going to go anywhere soon because we made that commitment to bring this to market. And along the way, you start seeing, again, the momentum, the things fall into place when you make that commitment energetic.
Yeah, I like it. And that's got to be interesting, too, because, you know, I'm kind of speculating here, but, you know, robotics is a pretty hot space. I'm sure especially the robotics engineers could go get pretty exciting salary jobs pretty quickly, right? So, you know. To make that commitment's a pretty big deal, right? I think.
Yeah, it is, and it's kind of funny because again, that's what I mean by timing. You know, look, we didn't survey the market and we said, hey guys, robotics are hot, let's go launch a robotics company. The idea for this actually dates back to about 5 years ago, 2013, when I had the conversation where robotics were just a blip on the radar screen. So again, we're very fortunate that the timing coincided. And as you build this and you unveil it to your small little universe, we've had engineers really knock on our doors and some who've left, you know, the big companies to join us because they see something unique, they see something special, and that's the best that we could do. We just offer people a wonderful opportunity.
That's awesome. What, so, you know, I asked this, what would you do differently if you were doing this all over again, or what advice would you give your, you know, slightly younger self, if you were going to go raise money for this again? Would you have gone to Sand Hill Road to start with or skip that path? Like anything, any, or other advice for founders, maybe in the robotic space, maybe in the dental space, maybe just generic stuff that we haven't covered. Big open-ended question.
So look, you know, hindsight is 2020, and I think we are in a difficult space because by geography, we're a Silicon Valley company, and we have the network and we have the people. So would I have gone to Sand Hill Road on the first pass again and do that? Absolutely. You got to validate that. You got to validate and to see what the reception is.
Yeah.
And I think the trail that we left behind, you know, between the people who had no clue what we're doing and the people that I felt genuinely said, I can't, you know, I like it, but come back at the Series A or the Series B, you know, you got to socialize this one way or another.
Sure.
So I think I probably would have done the same thing. I think the one thing that we probably would have done sooner is go to our customers sooner or in parallel. We really spent about 6 months with Sand Hill Road, and when we weren't really getting good traction, we said, hey, let's do another strategy.
Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah, I like that. So do you think you'll go back to Sand Hill Road for Series A, or do you think you'll stick with this sort of customer funding model, which is pretty interesting?
You broke up a little bit on the signal.
Sorry, do you think you will go to Sand Hill Road for your future round, Series A round, or will you stay with this customer funding model, which is pretty interesting?
Yeah, so you know, again, that's a hard question to answer. You know, will I go back to Sand Hill Road? Yeah, I'm going to go back and have the relationships, and we're going to go in and talk to the usual suspects and give them updates. Am I expecting that they're going to come in at a certain time? Probably at a later stage, at a growth stage, you know, perhaps. Will we go back with the dentist? In some capacity, I think we are now in different set of discussions with a lot of funds, both in healthcare and individual, coming out of Asia. So what we're seeing is tremendous, tremendous interest and competition for deals. We're also seeing a lot of time being there's a lot of tire kickers out there. But I think at a certain point we're seeing Asia step up to bat, and in terms of deal flow they are being more aggressive, better valuations than we've seen in Sand Hill Road.
Asia, and you think that's because of why? Any reason? Can you triangulate why?
Yeah, so to the best of our knowledge, the funds that we've spoken with, there's a lot of money sitting in Asia. It has to be unlocked and moved out of China and into the United States. I think in Asia, there's been a lot of momentum around quality of life, whether it's the aging population or the new middle class. And with that quality of life, one of the things that come about is healthcare. People are taking better care of their health, of their teeth, of cosmetic, of braces, of whitening, of all these things. So we're seeing that alignment of interest between, yes, we want some really good investments that are good investments and are relevant to our growing economy, especially healthcare in China.
Oh, interesting. Cool. All right, my friend, I think this is a good stopping point. We've covered a lot of great ground, and this is a fun,
awesome,
fun theme. So if people want to learn more, two questions. Where should they find you? Is it just Brachium? Maybe spell out the website URL. And then if you have anything you want to plug, or call to action, open job rec you're looking for, anything you want to plug, now's the time.
Awesome. So you can just find me, Yaz, Y-A-Z, at brachium.com, B-R-A-C-H-I-U-M. Don't let our website scare you. It is, we are in stealth for very good reasons. Two plugs, get on Founder Suite. Founder Suite is friggin' awesome. If you're gonna raise money without Founder Suite, you gotta get your head examined.
That was unsolicited. For the record, thank you. That was unsolicited, but thank you. I love it.
It's the truth, man. In terms of plug, look for our coming out of stealth by the end of the summer. And we are hiring. We are actively hiring software engineers, full stack, machine learning, vision. So if you are looking, drop us a resume.
Cool. Great. All right, sir. Continue good success. I can't wait to check this out when it goes live and get my mouth fixed by your machines in the future.
Awesome.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.